You ready, Linda?
I'd like to call the Design Review Board meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, January 26, 2016. Can I have a roll call, please?
Member Branch? Member Carroll?
Here.
Member Hyman?
Here.
Member Shaler?
Present.
Member Whalen?
Here.
Vice Chair Smith? Chair Schneider.
Here.
Thank you. Right, Member Sweeney.
Here.
Thank you.
Oops. Minutes for January 12th. Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Discussion?
I will abstain from that vote since I was not here.
Okay. The only item I found was just to be consistent on page 4 on the motion for item G2. Just to be clear, I was the one that voted no on that, and typically as is shown on other things, that's we normally make sure we document who's the no vote. So that was me on that. Other than that, I was good with it. Anybody else? No? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? One abstention. Zarin. Planning Director report.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chair and members. Just one item to report today. At the last meeting, I had mentioned that the new appointments of the outstanding DRB positions will be in February. Well, it's actually moved to the first meeting of March in the City Council. So keep you posted. I'm sure you'll get notified by City Clerk.
Okay. Review of agenda?
No changes on your agenda today.
Okay. And at this time, if there's anybody in the audience who would like to speak on an item that is not on today's agenda, now is the time to do it. Seeing none, we'll go to the sign calendar, item F1.
Item F1 is the Community West Bank signage located at 5827 Hollister Avenue, case number 15154 DRB.
Yes, Mr. Chair, sign subcommittee met today and we were generally okay with the two signs that were proposed. However, the applicant wanted to propose a third sign on the west elevation, so it has been continued 2 weeks to the next meeting. So moved.
Do you want to second that, Bill?
I'll second that. Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Item G1, Madam Secretary.
Item G1 is a new single-family residence at 3 Baker Lane, case number 15141 DRB.
Okay. Do we have to do declarations when it comes back around for the second time? Are we supposed to?
Yes,
yeah.
Just in case. Okay. You did go out again and did speak with the applicant.
Declarations?
Familiar with the site? No expertise.
I'm familiar with the site. I went last time. I have not gone since the last site visit. No expertise.
I drove by the site earlier today and no expertise.
And no site visit, no expertise conversations. Site visit, no expertise.
No ex parte and no recent site visit.
Okay. Joe?
So this is back before you for, I believe it's the third time. I think it actually would be best just to have the applicant walk you through the changes that they made in response to your last comments.
First.
We're here waiting. That's okay. Joe just said he's going to have you guys just talk us through what you've changed since last
night. Oh, sure. Different plans. You know how in-depth you want me to get. The comment was in regard to the automatic sensor for landscaping. She indicated that. As far as if there's anything else in landscaping, I'll go to the architecture. We have 2.0, no changes in the floor plan. He said that this door was already there, it just wasn't on the exterior elevations correctly.
Right.
And now it is. And so, here's your front west elevation, looking west. We took the two gables that we had, the two hips that we have in front and put full gables on them. And then we contemplated whether or not we wanted to have the gable over the protrusion at the other end as one gable to come out, and this would be close. But it seemed like everybody was so concerned about that, we went ahead and put a smaller gable and extended it out, the floor plan out. Okay. And then, of course, we just lined everything else out, and then the master tub that was protruding before, we had a little bit of an accent there before, then when I tried to find out what we want to do, I don't think that it was necessary to put a teeny little full gable over it either. I mean, a full hip. So we just let the existing fascia will pass over with something like about 8 inches of relief, so there won't be any water consideration there either. And then, of course, we just struck the line through, we went to 8-foot height, everything, sliders, front door, windows, and all that. We have 9-foot plate height, so we went ahead and rather than having things going up and down, which would be okay, we went ahead and lined everything up with the 8-foot high garage doors.
Questions from the board? Bill?
On the back of the house, is that the west elevation?
No. I made it so the back of the house is the west, the front of the house is the east, mm-hmm. off of Baker.
Is it, and back of the house on that west elevation, is that just one continuous roof, or is there anything that breaks up?
No, it does not break up. It's over. The walls go in and out, though. So between where the big slider is, that's a recess.
So you've got a covered patio here off the living room,
correct.
And one off of the master bedroom, because that roof is all out there.
Correct.
I guess just my concern is that will be a pretty visible site driving on Kyrie out there, and it's just going to be kind of a semi-large expanse of just one-dimensional, two-dimensional roofing.
Yeah, it's a backyard, yeah. And it'll be somebody else's backyard whenever they develop out. So the only reason we did that was because we felt the shadow lines will change, even though you come back there and you pick up on that fascia, the shadow lines will move, and we have that multi family or sitting room off the kitchen dining area also has some 45, so you're going to get even more shade line differentiation there.
Okay, thank you for that explanation.
Sure. Other questions?
The fencing along Cali Real, the yard, private yard fencing, is that the same material as the Hardy panel?
Yes. It's going to look like it's probably not going to be. We're probably going to go ahead and take the pre-manufactured horizontal or vertical sheeting, turn on its side. So, like I say, if you get them in dog ear, you won't see the dog ear because they'll be between the inserts, like it is here.
Okay.
They will be banded top and bottom. In your close sense.
And the roof is a
it's a slate
concrete slate look.
Yeah,
right?
It is a slate. It's a flat slate, but it's
right.
It's
okay.
Yeah. Maybe you guys didn't get that. Sorry. And it's a modeled.
Just under the camera again.
as you know, before we were trying to go dark. We did that on the 7 with a really heavy bud professional architectural series. But on this one, it had more continuity, but we went with a more broken up roof so that it has...
Blend you're talking about, the color,
the
right?
Yeah. They had darker blends, but we went with a medium blend in between.
Okay. Other questions? Comments?
I'll just start with my comment. I think this is a good example of a process that has worked well from the beginning of this to the outcome that we have today. I really think this is going to be a handsome house. It'll be different than the one at 7 Baker Lane as well. So hopefully you'll be able to achieve good things with the landscaping as well to soften and create as much privacy as you can.
Anybody else? Dennis?
Sure, I would agree. I think the process has gone well, and I appreciate the responsiveness of the applicant and designer.
I'm good with it, and certainly appreciate the changes you've made and all of that. So, somebody want to try a motion?
I'll make a motion for approval as presented.
I'll second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Joe, do you want us to leave this for you? It's the original one.
Yeah.
He'll need one of them.
Even though you already got copies of it, the same one we sent you.
The colors are better on these.
Okay, thank you. And just for recordation purposes, Phil made the motion, and Dennis seconded it, and it was a 6-0 vote for approval.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Chair, our next item, the applicants are just about here, so just to, I called them. We didn't realize we were going to move this quickly, but I think they should be parking right now, so we can just...
So we'll take a little 2-minute break, hopefully.
Yeah, we did leave you a Kit Kat there that you can have.
Is there any music to go along?
To item G2, Madam Secretary.
Item G2 is the Old Town Village Mixed Use Project, located South Kellogg Avenue, west of Kellogg Way. It's case number 14026 DRB.
And can I have declarations from everyone?
Site visit, no ex parte.
I did make a site visit, and relatively soon after the last meeting, I did have a meeting with the applicant.
Site visit, no ex parte.
And I'm familiar with the site, no ex parte conversations.
Site visit, no ex parte.
I have visited the site and no ex parte discussions.
Okay, who's?
I'll present,
Your
Mr. Chair.
Staff? You guys can come on up, you know. It's going to be a little tough to speak from back there.
I was wondering. I wasn't sure when the invitation was coming.
I'll just stay here.
This is a new format up here.
So this project came before the DRB in about 2 years ago, January 28, 2014, for conceptual review. Two of our members now currently were not present for that, Member Whalen and Member Sweeney. This project consists of 175 mixed-use residential and commercial units and consists of 113 traditional townhomes, 28 shopkeeper townhomes, and 34 live-work townhomes, and also a community center. After DRB review, the applicant submitted a formal application, went through the environmental process, and went to Planning Commission July 27, 2015. And then that was forwarded to the City Council on October 20th, where they approved the project. So the applicant's coming back before you with a new architectural design, some site plan modifications. It does stay within the parameters of what the City Council approved. The City Council approved the project that was submitted. However, the Planning Commission had a few comments that they passed along, and that was to consider increasing the size of the community center, increasing distance between buildings 36 and 37, and also to incorporate two-story units. So I think I'll let the applicant kind of go over their modified design. I know that they're, you know, bringing a new design to you, and they are not expecting that they will get a final today from you for design review. So if you can provide comments to them to how to move forward. And we did in the staff report attach the minutes to the conceptual review, the January 28, 2014 review, and I believe the applicant will be walking through those items.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yes, please.
No, thanks a lot.
So I'll introduce myself, and then we can go down the line. Lisa Plowman with RRM Design Group, and I'm doing some entitlement consulting for them as they transition to a different architectural firm.
Right. My name is Ben Vesley. I'm with City Ventures, the developer for the project. The project manager before me, Bill McReynolds, is moved on. It's not with our firm anymore, so I've taken over the management of the project.
And I'm Jeff Chelwick, senior principal at William S. Marsh Architects based in Santa Ana, and worked together with Ben and City Ventures for a number of years.
All right. I have put together a presentation. I understand that the presentations don't work so well on a projector, so I went ahead and printed these out, and I'll hand these out to have enough for everybody here. There we go. I'll pass that on to Mary. So let me start by saying I understand this is a somewhat informal process, which I really appreciate. And our firm, City Ventures, we do projects in cities throughout California that have a design review process. So what we hope to do, what we hope to do in the process is to sort of present the background, how we came to the design we have. But just as importantly is get feedback from you. If there's something we're missing in the background in sort of the priorities, that's important. As you'll see in the presentation, we expect to be back before you again. We wouldn't expect to get a final approval after this meeting. So let me just start with a really quick summary of what we're going to go through. I would love to talk about the background of this project, some of our design considerations, the process we're going through, and then really get to some of the things we're looking at changing from the design that both went to, before this body 2 years ago and then the City Council a few months ago. So next page. Background, you may know that we started on this project in 2012. That's when we got under contract with the current property owner. And that's, you know, when this design started to take shape. Lisa's firm, RRM, was very involved in, you know, in the early design efforts there. Again, 2 years ago came before this body, and some of the comments that we've seen from the minutes are, you know, looking for variation in architectural style, looking for a way to soften the bluntness at some of the entries. Additional storage, especially for bicycles, that's important for multimodal transportation since this is near Old Town. You know, we expect people to drive here certainly, but also to walk and to bicycle. Making sure there's enough parking for the shopkeepers. Consider light spillage from the rooftop decks, which were intended to go on the top of most of these buildings. And then also consider incorporating a community garden somewhere in the project. And then Planning Commission approved the project in 2015, July, earlier last year. Comments being increase the size of the community center, the distance between buildings 36 and 39, which are...
It was right there.
Yeah, exactly.
We had a unit there and moved the bike storage there.
And stuff. Right. And then also really consider adding some two-story elements within this project to try to break up the mass and scale of some of the, you know, corners of some of the buildings. And then finally, the council approved the project this past October, and really looking through the findings, one of the things that I found that sort of summarized how we got to where we are with a change in land use general plan amendment was this land use policy being that the designation of this as commercial Old Town would really allow for a wide range of local and community-serving retail and office uses, as well as residential uses in conjunction with an allowed non-residential use. So what we're trying to keep in mind here is that, you know, when we're looking at it from a site plan perspective, we're looking at a lot of footprints of buildings. But how this is really going to live, it's very important to think about how it lives at the ground floor, because that's what people are going to experience. That's what's going to make it a real, true mixed-use community with activities going on during the day, you know, not just emptying out during the day as residences. So with that, you know, the next question I was trying to answer myself is why are we redesigning this? If it had already been, you know, approved by the city council, why not just go into working drawings? And really part of it was because we did have a change in the management. The project manager who's working on it up until a few months ago is no longer with us. So, you know, myself and also our senior management really took it as an opportunity to look at the project as a whole and realize we've been working on this for 4 years, and you learn a lot in 4 years. The market changes over 4 years. And so we really did take a big step back. Lisa was very helpful in kind of making sure we understood what were the things that were most important that had to stay. And then from there, we started pushing on some of the things we'd like to change, which is what we're going to talk about today. But the key considerations we really wanted to bring to this is that, first of all, the design, the elevation, and we want to make sure it's something that's timeless. So it is, and we'll talk in more detail about that, but that it is, you know, we're going to look back on this project in 10 years and 20 years and 30 years, and it's still going to be attractive, and it will have fulfilled its intent of really making a connection to Old Town with the pedestrian path that's going to move through to the north and with Equal Road. Emphasizing the commercial design components, the mixed use, and really applying some of our, as developers, some of our practical experience in some of the finer details. And then the key issues that we heard when talking with staff and with talking with Lisa and just other people who've been involved is that really one of the main concerns, even in the public hearings, was about height and mass. That really the emphasis on having some two-story elements here in this project was important. And then finally, finding more than just the, you know, the buildings that we will sell as townhomes and live work is some of the community building features, like the community center, and we'll introduce some other features. So this is where we're starting from. At this point, if there's anything I'm missing or anything that I've overstated, please tell me. Okay. Do you want to throw in anything?
No.
Okay. All right. All right. So our design process, you know, the project being approved in October, we really pulled together a different design team in November and started thinking of these new concepts. We're here in January, Design Review Board. We're going to take any feedback you can give us, and we're going to turn this around very quickly and try to submit again on February 9th, you know, a modified site plan, modified elevations, whatever it is we can pick up from this meeting. And we hope if we do it well, we'll have a project approved by this body in February. If not, we'll do it again. We'll take the comments in February, and we'll come back in March, and hopefully it'll happen in March, if not February. But again, the point of this is this really is meant to be iterative. So we need as much feedback from you guys, you know, like or dislike as possible. But we'd really like to begin construction drawings in March. We hope to have a recorded final map in April, which we understand is pretty aggressive, but we're going to try to do it. And most importantly, we'd really like to get a grading permit in June and start turning dirt and getting this thing going. It's been going on for 4.5 years at that point. So with that, let me get to the heart of it. This is what we're these are the proposed changes. There were, because we put this submittal together and we submitted it 3 weeks ago, once we submitted it, we realized there were even more things we wish we had time to submit. So I have some sort of additional exhibits in here, and we'll welcome your feedback on any of that. But what's included in the submittal that you'll see is a change in the elevation style, a removal of the roof decks entirely. We've you know, affirmed that we will include two-story units in the project and at the entryways, because I think we'd have the greatest impact there. We want to introduce the concept of some marker units along, Kellogg Ave. That's important, we think, from the highway, from the 217. As you're driving by, it's more, it actually would give a little bit of an identity to this project as opposed to just more buildings that look like some of the other buildings. We're looking at relocating the community space. And we all want to revisit the idea of bike storage that was presented in the drawings that went before the Planning Commission, City Council.
So I just want to add something that to note that we did remove the roof decks, but there's private balconies for each of those units, mm-hmm, to create some, right, private open space and for the each particular unit.
They're just not at the roof.
It's just not at the roof.
Right. And then some additional considerations that weren't incorporated in this is the trash containers. We're looking at removing the trash containers and having trash bins in the garages. The entries to the shopkeepers currently are shown back next to the garage. We'd like to move those around to the front.
Did I understand you're going to remove these trash enclosures and put the trash in the garages?
Trash bins in the garages, right.
Okay.
Correct. Entries to the townhomes, that's some of the units along the south and the west edge, just a slightly different treatment of how those are meeting that circulation road. And then finally, some different ideas of what to do with the tot lot and introduction of the swimming pool for this community. So this is the exact same page as the last page, and I'm hoping that by the time we get here, you guys will have anything I can scribble down. It would be very helpful.
Did you mention parking?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, parking spaces. So one other thing here is parking spaces. There right now you can see that there are parking spaces kind of in between a number of the buildings.
Sort of like here.
Right. And so we're going to propose pulling all those out and just creating another row of parking someplace, because we think there's a better way to organize the parking. So, but we'll have some details on that. Can I keep going?
Do we have any color versions that we can the plans that we can reject? Is that what's going on?
There are no.
We can, everything here is in black and white, but the site plan, everything I had in color is printed in color. So the site plans are in color.
Okay.
Right.
Can we, even just the black and white?
Yep.
That's what you're going to use.
Yeah.
Well, but what's happening here, if I understand right, is you've got an original and you've got some iterations that happened, and now we're
There we go. So this first page, elevation style and roof decks. This is on the left side of the page, starting at the top, is a shopkeeper building on the left side. That's what was included in the approval package of Planning Commission and City Council. Below that, a live work building. On the left side, that was what was submitted, and then finally a residential building at the bottom on the left side. And on the right side would be the corresponding designs for those buildings, starting, you know, shopkeeper at the top, live work in the middle, and then on the bottom right would be a residential building. So it is it's a considerable change in the style. The impetus for this was, it was really two. The first is that absolutely appreciate the creativity and all the thought that went into designing what had been designed. But when we looked at this and we thought about sort of the timelessness and how this might look 10 years from now, 20 years from now, we've seen a lot of examples of you know, contemporary design that over time just starts to look a little dated. And, you know, we think we would be better off trying to do something that's more traditional and maybe not as daring, but, you know, something that we would feel, you know, has a better chance of standing the test of time. The second component, though, is really that this really, the contemporary design really felt like a departure from Old Town. And while it ties into some of the commercial buildings to the south and to the industrial buildings to the west, if we're really talking about building a connection to Old Town, this contemporary design just feels a little bit more separate from, whereas something that's more traditional would feel, I mean, there's nothing, I don't think there's anything that looks quite like what's on the right side in Old Town, but at least it's getting there. You know, it's a little bit more traditional. So do you, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, also with that is, you know, contemporary on one side and more historic recreation on the other side. And what we're liking to propose is to... What we're proposing is a little more abstract in the middle and give that flexibility to have some fun playfulness in it that's in the contemporary design style, but add some more materials and have a little more scale to it potentially than the contemporary. So you can see on the right side we have some stone brick options, whereas we didn't have that on the contemporary. Alternative siding relationships, maybe creating more of a feeling of this is my house that I live in, or this is my residence that I live in a townhome kind of situation. And it's just, again, we're here for the feedback. But we're looking at more of a timeless, as we discussed earlier.
So a question, as I look at the illustrations, this is not really one for one. That is, on the left becomes what's on the right. That is not the case. It's, these are really just illustrations.
Well, I think what I tried to do is grab from the presentation material a four-unit shopkeeper building, for instance, on the left, what was original, to a four-story shopkeeper on the right. And I'm not going to claim that these scales are exactly right, but I tried to line up the 35-foot with the 35-foot, so it should be, you know, it's not engineered close, but it's eyeballed close. Yeah.
New look is on the right.
Right. Oh, exactly. Yes. And then I think the other thing for this conversation is that understanding that we really are, you know, this was a departure from what had been, you know, what's been in the public domain and what's been approved, is we weren't expecting to hit the nail on the head. And so in the submittal materials, we actually included two pages of additional elevations that were some of our inspiration for, you know, how we got here. And so, you know, as a for discussion purposes,
the
photos on the sort of second to the last and third to the last pages of the submittal material, the color, right?
Yeah.
That you have, I think it's below there. There you go. So, you know, again, we believe that the design that's on the right side is something that's the direction we'd like to pursue, and we can certainly, you know, emphasize certain elements or minimize certain elements. But if this isn't it, if you know, individually or as a group, you feel like this is sort of missing the mark, these are some other examples of, you know, whether it's a particular element or a design style that you feel might be more appropriate. So with that, I'd love to get the board's feedback on this, and then, or I can keep going, but I figure this is a big enough topic.
questions from the board? Dennis?
Rather than a question. I appreciate the direction you're going. I would encourage you to keep going. One of my objections, I think, or my criticisms of the work is the old or the previous really just looks like stacked units that happen to have bumped up against one another. You're moving away from that. I would encourage you to do that, and to accomplish that, move away from the identification of each unit and have it look like its own building. By example, a roof, a unifying roof, rather than one that just has regular rise gables and a roof line above it. I might illustrate that by some of the great hotels of the Canadian Rockies, where you have one great roof that encompasses and defines the building. What I'm trying to say is less less like separate units that happen to be sitting next to each other, and the design as a whole. And the roofs can vary throughout the complex, giving each building its own identity, which I think is really going to be the most important thing about this, the density of this development, is the character as one navigates through it being identified that, oh yes, this is my street or this is my building. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions at the moment?
I had one question. The conceptual landscape plan versus the site plan we're looking at here, it's quite a different design for the central plaza area. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. The landscape, I think the one concept that is introduced in this landscape design, this is on the next, I think it's two pages back, label of the page is community space, is that it really is using a row of trees, and also what you can't really see in great detail here, and this is absolutely something that would come back with much greater detail in the February meeting, but it's really creating a spine of benches, seating, that isn't, it's not solid, but at least it creates sort of a direction, if you will, so that it really it encourages people to just move through the space.
So is this the direction you're going, or more paving like this?
I think we're seeing this as the ground plane, absolutely, you know, enhanced paving, the whole thing. But we don't see it as just an empty paved plaza. It would have some landscaping and really some planters and some built-in furniture.
And trees, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. I'll just chime in with a comment. I kind of like more paving, actually, through there. I think it's a little more urban and relates to downtown. Rather than having little individual walkways to each door, I think the openness of more paving is nice, what you've done on this plan. So.
Okay. Let's do anything at the moment, or?
I do have some questions, and I'm not really sure when's the right time to do that. If we're just talking about critique of the change in architectural style right now versus other project attributes.
I think that's what he was trying to get out of us. Yeah.
I'd love to get as much as much comment on that elevation style.
But we'll have an opportunity for all of you.
I'm expecting to come back around at the end and kind of revisit everything anyway.
Let me just throw a few
anyway,
in here that may or may not be somewhat germane to architectural style. Any idea where we could see where the two stories will be located?
Absolutely.
And how many that would be, or yes. What buildings that would entail?
Yes. On the next page of the handout. So the units that are marked in kind of a salmon color would be the two-story units. So that the entrance on Equal, as you enter the project, those first two units that you'd see, those would be two-story. And then the entrance on Kellogg Avenue, the two corner units, and in either both ends of the buildings being two-story, so it really reduces the scale, or perhaps we would take some of the two-story units and put them out at these corners as well, right there. So the idea, though, is just it softens the entry. When you drive in this way, you know, you see some two-story elements here, and driving in this way, two-story elements here. And, you know, this is a consideration, and those are considerations as well.
And also when driving into Santa Barbara on the 217, looking directly at that, you'd see the two-story elements first if they're arrayed over on that side?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. They're going to be back inside because this is the what you're going to see from 217, I mean, no matter which way you're going.
I mean, you're going to have a property that sort of blocks this, but you'll see.
And the next thing I wanted to bring up just had to do with the height of the buildings. We had just seen a project, the Villages of Los Caneros, where they got an increase to 33 feet for three-story elements, and noticed on some of the projections that were provided to us were 37 foot. It looked like ridge lines, and I was just wondering if that's actually the height that's intended in this next submission.
I think the height will be the maximum allowed by the code. I think I was interpreting the conditions as the structural development of a building can be no more than 35 feet. I think that's the height limit for this approval.
Yes, that's correct. Right. That is what you're locked into.
But
35
but
feet.
Is it a maximum to the peak, or is it to the mean height of a gable roof?
There's a definition of height.
Right, so it's the definition.
So we'll have to meet
that. So we'll have to make sure we're
right.
So if I'm to answer your question, if the code says that the building's no more than 35 feet, then we'll have to just find a way to reduce the height of the buildings to 35 feet. I think we were first of all just trying to start with an elevation design, and then if there's a way in the code to allow that, then we would, but it is markedly lower than what was proposed before.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, there were stair towers that exceeded 35 feet.
Mm-hmm, with the rooftop decks. And will there be some sort of shade analysis of the internal shading on buildings? As the shade, as I was noticing out on the site, that buildings that are to the north of the three-story buildings will receive a lot of shade unless they're set back, and they could be in shade for virtually most of the year.
You know, we've done, we weren't planning on doing it, and I'll tell you why. Part of it is that the density of the project being what it is, and having developed projects of this density before, I mean, you get in winter months, you're going to get, you know, shadier parts of the project than in other months of the year. But I think that's, I mean, the benefit of what you have here is you have 39 different buildings, and so there's all kinds of ways that light is going to pass through this. So.
Thank you, those are my questions for now.
Okay. This doesn't have anything to do with the architecture, but is there going to, did the EIR require or look at a sound wall? Is the sound wall required along 217?
It is. Yes, in some locations. Yes. There are some in some locations, yes.
There was a noise study done and there were mitigations.
There is a wall that has to be along back here, and then there's a wall that's between these units. And then there's, you know, they have to follow special construction techniques for those front units. But if there's a balcony out there, there has to be some kind of shield. Like, I think you've seen that on some of your other projects where you've done some kind of clear shield.
So, but the bottom line is there are sound issues that will need to be addressed either with wall or second floor balconies. Okay.
That's correct.
Okay.
On that point, how does that being identified as a marker unit work with the sound wall? Don't those work against each other?
No, not necessarily. I wouldn't say no, because the wall won't be in front. Like these marker units, we don't have a wall right out in front of those. What we have is walls at the back of these units to protect any kind of, they have some recreational open space back there, right? So they have to meet that standard, but they don't have that in the front.
Well, and I'm assuming that the yellow units are all the shopkeeper units.
Correct.
So all of this first floor, at least, is all
commercial.
In theory, commercial.
Correct.
Which would not have the same sound issues as the residential up at the second and third floors.
Correct.
Okay. So any place there's a yellow building or the shopkeeper units, they're not putting the wall out here at property line. They're going to run from building to building. And then I don't know what happens here at those units, but right? So, as I understand it.
Yeah.
Correct?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was there a visual analysis done for the EIR?
There were no view obstructions. So no.
Okay.
And it was a mitigated negative declaration that was prepared.
Oh. Okay.
Just a
Anybody else have any questions?
Wanted more feedback on the architecture. We haven't gotten a lot.
Or you can just tell us you love it.
Well,
that's great feedback.
But
too.
I would say I would agree with Dennis that it's a great. You're moving in the right direction for sure. Though if I look at the three buildings on the right, they all have, they're all quite similar. I noticed that you put some like brick or stone veneer on one of them. I would say that what we've done with, because there's going to be a lot of, you know, 39 of these buildings, I really like the idea of unifying them with making them look like they're one building, not a bunch of buildings mm-hmm. stuck together. Mm-hmm. So with the roof, however that might be accomplished. But I also would really like to see differentiation building to building. With color blocking, it all would have to be complementary, of course. Mm-hmm. But siding treatment, veneer, I'm not a real big fan of seeing a bunch of different veneer and siding within one grouping. I mean, maybe mm-hmm. a little bit. It's tasteful. But more, I would like to see complementary but differentiating color blocking, siding, veneering treatments from building to building. And I don't know if my colleagues, you know, want to chime in on that or agree or disagree, but that would just be my general feedback.
Thank you.
I'd say we're ready to move on.
All right. That's great. Well, thank you. So moving on, the next page here shows two-story marker units in community space. Again, the two-story units are placed near the entrances to the project. So that's the salmon-colored buildings. The marker units being the two ends of the shopkeeper buildings that are on Kellogg Ave. And in the submittal, we actually showed what a marker enhancement might look like. It's just a slightly taller roof line, and then the roof is turned, you know, a different orientation. And then the community space, this was actually one that we were very interested in getting some feedback on. So previously in the submittal, in the program that was approved in the previous hearings, the community space was sitting right in between buildings 31 and 39, so it was right in that little, right on that elbow. We don't have a good, you know, we don't have a programmed use for that area yet, but the next presentation. But what we've done is we basically moved it across to the other side of that plaza and attached it to building 23. And really the impetus for that was that as you enter off of Equal Road, you're going to look right down that pathway right at the community center. So it also does something to hide that alley a little bit, so you're not looking down, you know, down to some more garage doors. So
it also creates a really nice courtyard effect too. So you have two paseos connecting. There could be an activity space at that center at that junction mm-hmm. of the two paseos.
Yeah, in the landscape plan, I think it also, or sorry, the next page back, it says community space, but it's that conceptual landscape plan. It also shows how that building then, you know, to the west is more open space, which we can program with, you know, outdoor cooking and eating space, or, you know, some sort of programmed active space. It really, I think, integrates better together as one space. So we'd like to, you know, in the next iteration of these plans, pursue that further with the community space over next to building 23 as opposed to its previous location. I think there were comments all along about the size of the community space, and this is something that we have a lot of flexibility with. So I think a minimum to meet the project description is 1,664 square feet, but it'll be bigger than that, and we'll have some dimensions and some size for the next iteration of these plans for you. Is that right, Mary?
And it's more community gathering space oriented rather than having a gym in there.
Right. Right.
City Ventures experiences is the gyms just sit vacant and are not used by the residents.
Right.
Ben, can you point out where the previous community center is and then where it's moving to?
Sure.
It was actually right here. It joined us in the one building, didn't it?
It
right.
did.
Right, and then it's moving.
So it was right there, and it's moving from there to
there.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Just for audience.
So a couple more pages back past the conceptual landscape plan is just a very rough sketch of this community center. And this is, again, when we bring something before you next month, it'll have more detail here. But the idea is that it really is just a gathering space for people that are living in the community. Think of it as an open library, an open coffee bar It's got some really nice furniture. It's got some big, you know, accordion doors, so the whole thing can open up onto the plaza. It's got a place to hold meetings, but it's really just a place that almost, you know, maybe it's as big as this room or bigger, where it's just got some great furniture, a place to make coffee, maybe a place to warm up some food, and it's the place that if it's, you know,
we'll go and hang out, watch evening, the Super Bowl.
Yeah, watch Super Bowl together, exactly. But what was here before was treadmills, and our experience is that once those get put in, they rarely get used. And the other theme that we'd like to carry through is that, you know, any opportunity we have for commercial activity, we'd like to reserve that for the mixed-use components. So somebody very well might start a training business, doing personal training with weights and kettlebells and yoga or something like that. So we'd rather not have the HOA trying to manage, you know, a fitness room that might compete with one of our mixed-use uses. So any feedback or comments on the community center, the marker units, location of the two-story units?
The elevation of that marker unit, then, so they can kind of get a sense of what that
is. Oh, sure. And so it's in your submittal packet. It's the very first of our building elevations shows a marker unit.
Page A, sheet A4. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So there it is, yeah.
So a question for staff. I see on that, Mary, that the height is 37 feet. How is height determination made? Is there an allowance for roof pitch, or is there an absolute maximum? I heard 35 feet a few minutes ago, and now I'm seeing 37. Frequently, there are allowances for roof pitch. Is that the case?
Yes, there is. I'm actually referring to the new code, which I don't have the old code, but I believe it's very similar, that the building height is measured from the average elevation of the highest and lowest point of the natural grade. So yes.
To where, though? To the roof peak or to the...
Or to the plate line.
To the topmost point of the roof.
Oh, wow.
But so not including allowed projections.
And what is that dimension?
For this project, 35 feet.
35 feet, okay. Well, that's going to be a challenge to implement the comment that I made about making roofs work, but I like the imagery and direction you're going here with giving that corner element some identity, especially through the roof. I think roofs are especially powerful in conveying a building's personality. I wanted to go back to another comment about the view in, and this is more of a landscape comment. It's very apparent on the plan that visually one can be drawn from the outside, either from Equilt or Kellogg, to the center. This is a very strong planning premise. However, what I see in these preliminary planting plans works against that. That is a great big tree obscuring your view in from Equil. Mm-hmm. And then the tree in the middle of the plaza, and then the other trees leading out to Kellogg. I would strongly encourage you to frame these views rather than block them with your landscape. And I could have some disagreeing views with the landscape designers. I would resist from putting a great big tree in the middle of the space. It seems that there are some nice spaces around the edges that could easily hold a heritage tree, as I see on the previous plan. And that's a very strong idea too, but yeah. Use the trees to shape the space rather than inhabit and infill it.
All right. Thank you. So, any other comments on the community space?
I probably should chime in a little bit on that. I think what you've got here is much better than what you had before, and I like the whole because I think what's going to happen here is it will be a, like I said, Super Bowl type situation where, you know, some people come over and hang out, or the other thing that happens is the HOA association will have to have at least their annual meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have issues down the road and you get a real popular one for some reason, this whole folding thing and being able to expand out into the plaza, I think, works really well. So I think conceptually this is far better than what you had before, from my standpoint.
As far as community space, the last meeting many years ago, we talked about a community garden. Is that something you're still considering?
It's on the plan.
Absolutely.
Community gardens over in that area. Yeah.
Have you had luck with those before in other locations?
In certain locations, we have. It's interesting. It's usually the smaller the area, the more successful they are.
Right.
If it's a wide open area, it seems to get lost. It's less overwhelming. I think people just care for it a lot more. You know, if it's they have this very small amount of their own shared open space, they really want to work at it and make it nice. It is a project we have in Signal Hill, the Jeff's firm design, that we have just one. It's on Pacific Coast Highway. It's on a grade. It's got all kinds of restrictions, and it's just this one little corridor, big enough for a bowling alley, and it's got two rows of planters, and it's just people love it. You know, something to do.
Okay.
All right. Now we're moving into items that weren't included in your submittal, but there's just some additional material here for your comment. The first is bike storage, and that is, you know, when we looked at the plan originally, we saw these large bike storage rooms. There were four or five of them, and you know, my thought was that if I lived here and I had a bicycle, I certainly wouldn't park it in a storage facility. I'd put it in my garage. Lisa pointed out that wasn't really the point. it could be the point, but the point is actually that this is about multimodal transportation and making sure that if you are a customer here, if you work here, or if you just, you know, maybe you ride your bike more than a lot of people, you want to have a safe place to put your bicycle. So it's really not incorporated into this plan, but something that you'll see in the next plan is really some well-thought-out locations for where secure bike storage can go that really serves the shopkeeper and mixed-use components of this. But for the homeowners, what we're talking about is when we get into the design of the units, the garages will have very, you know, specific places to store, you know, at least two bicycles. And then also, we've actually had this conversation with the city's licensed trash provider.
Marble.
Yeah, and asked them the question, do we need to do trash bins or can we have individual cans? And their response was, if we're fine with individual trash cans. So it's our experience that whenever homeowners can put the trash in their own garage and take it out once a week as opposed to carrying a bag of trash to a thing, they much prefer to use the cans. It's a real pain once a week when you got to figure out where to put the trash cans, but it's totally worth the trade-off as opposed to having to carry the trash to a trash container. So, yes.
Just brings up the question of, I mean, out here, at least you've got these little, I don't know how they are, 5, 8 foot, 10 foot driveways in the alleys. Where are the trash cans going on trash day?
We'll have to put together a plan for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
How is the trash going to work for the mixed use buildings, the commercial?
They will just have to have additional cans in their garages because the pickup is going to have to happen off of the private property. So that's something we'll have to work into the floor plans as well, but that's a great comment.
the shopkeeper units are ownership opportunities?
Yes.
And if you were to sell it, you would want to, is there any qualification that it has to be continued to be used as a shopkeeper unit?
Yeah.
It's part of the conditions of approval that it's commercial space.
So as you transition out and somebody transitions in, they would need to meet those qualifications to...
Yeah, they're purchasing a commercial space.
Right. So it's, and it's, so the, first of all, there's use restrictions per, you know, the city's municipal code, but there's also CC&Rs that reinforce those uses. So you would have to, you'd have to continue to use it, you know, according to the municipal code. And those are reported against all the properties. So when somebody were to purchase a shopkeeper unit, that would be part of their, you know, come with their title report. You have a, you know, recorded restriction against living there and whatever activities are not allowed. All right. One other thought here is that we do have in the site plan, and this is in the submittal and has been on the plan for a while, is we do have these bicycle storage rooms. There's four or five of them around the site. So one consideration is that instead of using them for bicycle storage, we can use them for the for different shared activities. We want to be careful that we're not just creating, you know, storage sheds where people are going to leave stuff. We'd want to make them in some ways maybe not fully enclosed, but at least secure with, you know, attractive fencing or something like that, but so they don't become just a place for people to store stuff. But for example, next to the community garden would be a great place to store gardening big materials and equipment. So if you had gloves and hose and things like that, shovels, you don't have to carry it, you know, across the site if you wanted to work in the garden. So some concepts, one is for gardening. Another is just for exercise. If you, you know, come back from the beach or come back from a run, just having like an outdoor shower where you can just go and, you know, rinse off and then throw your wetsuit in your garage or something like that. So we're playing with a couple different concepts there, but that's what this idea is on the right side of this trash enclosure page is, you know, it's a room at the end of these buildings. There's a number of them identified in the site. And when we come back, you know, we'll have these more fully detailed out, but if there's any...
And the elevations. We'll have elevations.
Yeah, elevations too. Right. So if there's any concerns or questions about those or comments on different uses that might work better or worse than others. Beekeeping?
Well, not in there.
some more comments as I listened to you and new ideas emerge. It seems that all of these shopkeeper units and that are adjoining the community space could have a completely different character than the surrounding residential units. They could even be more utilitarian. I don't want to say going back to the original design, mm-hmm. but they could have a complete different set of imagery mm-hmm. and materials. So that their character could be better displayed more simply as signage, you know, places mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. a shopkeeper to put up a signage, but to differentiate themselves completely from within the complex.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Any other thoughts on bike storage, trash enclosures, these additional spaces?
Is the bike storage going to be covered or open?
Covered.
Good. Indoor space or just covered?
Probably not entirely. I think what we're going to try to design is something that is, again, it's not, we wouldn't want it to be the sort of thing you can lock and not see inside because things can get stolen in there and people just leave stuff. You know, it just becomes a place for people to leave their stuff. So it'll probably be covered but somewhat transparent, whether it's a gate or a fence or something. We'll have to put some more detail to that. Or maybe just windows, you know, just so you can see what's going on inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. So then another item here that wasn't on the submittal that we'd love to get your feedback on is for the shopkeeper units, and these are identified on the site plan in yellow, this design has the entrance to the residential component from the back next to the garage. And what we'd like to propose is to, in a sketch similar to this, is to bring the residential entries in back to the front of these buildings.
So yeah, it would be like this, just so simple.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, so previously they were here.
They were coming in here and off the alley almost.
Off the, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was off this. Well, it was to sort of match up with what was going on with these units and provide a different entrance, particularly if you were going to have a separate owner to the shopkeeper units. But I don't think the change is, I mean, I see the change as something that's just different, not worse or better. Or,
better
yeah,
in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So.
So they would be moved to the Eckwell side?
Yes.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And Kellogg Ave side.
Would that encourage people to then use that parking for residential uses rather than for the other purposes?
Possibly.
I mean, it seems nice to put it out there because it's just a nicer entrance, but at the same time, it creates a conflict of two competing uses.
Yeah. Although I would say, though, that the demand for guest parking for residential is at the off hours than the demand is for the commercial. So traditionally, your demand for the commercial is going to be during the work week, right? Okay. Yeah, and
which
during the day.
8 to 5.
Yeah, night. Right. And then your guests are traditionally coming on the weekends or in the evenings. And so it's probably complementary to one another.
I still think it's better because I just from a user standpoint, I'd much rather enter.
From the front.
From the front.
Yeah.
Than have to park someplace and find and walk down an alley to get to somebody's front door, just a better.
Sure.
All right. And then the next page is the entries for the townhome units, and this isn't a big departure from what was originally planned, but these are the gray buildings that are on the south and the west side of the site. So same sort of program, you know, three and four unit wide buildings. But in this case, instead of, you know, facing a street, they're really facing back into a wall. So we don't have the same opportunity to put the front door, quote unquote, front door opposite the garage. So this is where we are looking at, you know, maintaining this design where your front door is next to your entrance. But I think the key here is that we're looking at the dimension of the distance between the edge of the road and the front door. I mean, frankly, we're trying to minimize it to the point where we need it to still be an attractive residential entrance and have separation from a driveway. But the point of, really the greater point here is that even if we can pick up another foot or two between this building and the driveway, and you sort of look at the site plan as a whole, sorry, if we can pick up, you know, a foot or two here, a foot or two on that side, and then also reduce these by a few feet here, the whole road just moves out a little bit, and we've just created, you know, 5 or 6 more feet on the interior of the site to really spread the buildings out a little bit. And that's the point of it. I mean, just to be totally transparent, it's not that we want to make shorter, smaller, you know, entrances, but we just think the benefit on the inside of the site to giving more separation between the buildings, more landscaping, you know, opportunities.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in theory, right? Sense. I mean, right. If you gain 2 feet here and 2 feet here, and the roads all move out, you gain 4 feet in between buildings,
yeah.
Right?
Exactly. So I mean, really, the key question here is we've shown a dimension of 5 feet from the front of the building, but and we can maybe provide some different examples of what these look like or how they could be designed at 4 feet, but if there's any comment or concern about how this works.
Your planter depth is between 4 and 5 feet is what it looks
correct.
Like.
Correct. And then the entrance, sorry, go ahead.
Is that 4? Oh, here we go. That's 5 feet at the moment. You've got 5 feet to the garage face, but actually 7 feet at the moment to this.
To the front door.
Front. Well, not even to the front door, to the patio, to lead you to the front door, right?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And
So as that shrinks down, if you go that way, then we just need to understand what this elevation looks like because those two three-story faces start to come together.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
As a result of creating the spaces there, it looks like these townhomes get pushed a little bit closer to the perimeter. And is a 10-foot setback an adequate amount?
That's what was
before
approved.
That wall is there.
That's the approved setback, and that's where they were.
And what was the landscaping that was supposed to be in that area? Is that up to each individual resident, or will that be an HOA issue as to what will go between the 6-foot concrete wall and the side of their residence?
mean, those would be private rear yards. I imagine at this point we would have a basic, you know, probably some landscape with probably not a lot of turf, but more, you know, permeable soil with some small patio with maybe some options to do something upgraded or something. But they would be intended as private rear yards. Yeah.
I think reducing this or increasing the site around the west and south side works in favor of one of your biggest challenges, which are the adjacent industrial buildings. Those, you know, many of those units along there are going to be looking right into, they're really big buildings too, to the south and to the west, that are going to shade those backyards.
Well, there is quite a bit of distance between ATK and here, because that's where they have their parking. And I believe...
I'm talking about that.
I'm sorry, I'm over here. I'm over here.
That building, your enclosure sheet SP2 shows the adjacent buildings that are really quite two and three story industrial buildings that are going to cast a big shadow, especially the one on the west. So I think you're increasing that space around there works in that favor, but those are a big challenge because. The second, third floor are going to be looking right into those buildings.
Oh, yeah, right there.
A number of those units on the south and west. So whatever you can do in terms of fenestration, maybe lifting the windows up higher so that there's more of a skyline view and not directly in. I would be careful to think out those units. Oh, yeah, and as far as those small fence yards, looking more carefully at what are labeled boardwalks, so is the assumption that typically between building 22 and 23, every unit gets a little fenced yard. And so can you, what are your thoughts about what that boardwalk is? Is it just hardscape and fences? My point being that these are very sort of unfriendly passages between almost all of these buildings, 22, 23, 24, 25, 27, and 28. I would encourage you to think of these as more pleasant, neighborly spaces as they're conceptually laid out. They don't look that friendly or attractive. And I think in terms of community, these are the nicest places for people to walk around and socialize in. Because, you know, the kids are all going to be playing in the alleyways, and it's a great place to play. But other people who just want to stroll around and pass by their neighbors, these are the places where they're going to see and meet each other. And I would encourage you to look carefully at those designs.
I would agree with that. And it's probably just a matter of maybe offsetting fences and someplace down here creating a little kind of bulb from that standpoint so that can become kind of a mini gathering spot every so often.
Or even if the gates are offset with a little bench seat there. It's just a little breathing space or on a casual shrub or tree
instead of a cattle
of those spaces.
I was going to mention that maybe the fences jog down from 6 foot height or 5 foot height down to 3 foot six.
So it
has a neighborly feel. It's a good idea.
Well, I'm really glad that this is coming up because this is something that we included in the intentionally in our submittal, but I just failed to sort of call it out as a change. But this is something that we found, especially over the last couple of years, we were trying very hard to maximize our patio area because it really is a place where that's where people could meet the people right next door. I mean, it might not be necessarily a community space, but if you've got something big enough to have a real picnic table and a real barbecue, have friends over, that's when you meet the guy next door or the woman next door and that sort of thing. But point taken, the space in between has become, we've overshot a little bit. And so maybe we pull those back a little bit and then come back with sort of a design of, you know, here's what the pathway looks like, and then there's some softer landscaping and the setback and what the material is. Definitely think that's worth a closer look. I think what we used to do is every patio was 4 to 6 feet deep just because we weren't thinking about it. And then we have all this wide open space, which looks really nice you know, from a land plan, but really when you get out there and see how it's used, it's just not really utilized that much. Whereas if people feel like they just have a little bit more room out front, you know, I personally, we have very, my apartment in Los Angeles, we have a very small back patio, but we spend half our time in the summer in this tiny little 10 by 10 thing, just grilling out our neighbors. So it's great. That's great. Thank you.
What's the width of that walkway in there? I can't remember. Is it marked?
This one right says 7 feet is the measurement of that. So it's a scale of probably, you know, 6-7 feet ish.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
So we'll put some more detail on that for sure. Okay. All right, so we're getting to the end. Entries on the townhomes. So then I think the last thing here is the last page, the title of this page is of the handout I handed out. It's parking spaces, tot lot, and swimming pool. So first with the parking spaces, the design that had been in front of the city council has parking spaces that are kind of set in between most of the buildings around the perimeter. And we looked at that and thought that this is not a good use of space between the buildings and probably not the most efficient way to find a parking spot. So it makes sense if you know exactly where you want to go and that spot isn't occupied, but if that's occupied, you're driving around and finding a spot. Whereas if we remove these, a couple of things it can do. First of all, we can bring some of the buildings a little bit closer together and still maintain, you know, a wide enough space for perhaps some side yards or just some additional landscaping opportunities. By bringing the buildings a little bit closer, we might actually be able to gain a couple feet here at the entrance, so it gets, you know, a more welcoming entrance, both on the Kellogg Ave side and the Eccles Street side. And really the place that we've identified, you can see these red arrows are sort of pointing, there's a,
right here.
This area here doesn't have any parking. So the idea would be to, with some of the space that we're recapturing by making this wider, is to just start to move the buildings a couple feet at a time. So the orientation looks essentially the same, but you'd have another row of parking. The units in building 35 would still have, you know, generous front yards. This element would just sort of shift over to the west.
And are you expecting that to be pull-in or parallel?
Pull-in. It would essentially look like the parking that's a little bit further south. It would just be more, you know, another, I think we have to capture 14 spots or something.
Yeah.
The other thing is, now that if we're able to remove the trash enclosures, these are additional opportunities for parking, or just for more landscaping in between the parking spaces, so it doesn't look like a, you know, just a long row of parking. Mm-hmm. Our experience with tot lots is that they're not, once they're installed, they're not used very much, and we've never really been happy with one that we've seen. So we're going to propose something that's not a tot lot. It will be some. It could be either some very passive space for children to throw a ball, or, you know, some furniture for parents to sit and watch their kids throw a ball. But the idea would be to make this more of an open, passive space. If anybody has any strong objections to that, let me know.
Sorry, where is that?
Oh, I'm sorry. The tot lot is up here.
Big red X.
Yeah.
X marks the spot.
I was going to comment on that. Maybe it's not traditional play equipment. Maybe something like a rock climbing wall, or yeah, I don't know, just something not, it's not your traditional slide. And you know. But I think, you know, having it open might work as well.
They do make actually some interesting things like that, like bouldering and that kind of stuff, that looks a little more natural, but it's still something for kids to climb on and play on.
Yeah, we'll look at that.
Before we shift off that, I just wanted to, if it's okay, to chime in on the placement of that play area and the tot lot. Just to note that the four-bedroom homes are mostly arrayed along the south and western side, which is where you'd expect families with children potentially to be living, and it's kind of a distance for them to find a place to play the way things are currently structured.
Yeah, that space seems pretty tight for a play area.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and maybe it really does function better as just as a passive open space that people can program as they want to and not try to have programmed every open space, you know, for the project.
The other potential, I guess, depending on when you're grabbing a couple of feet here and there, is to try grab enough parking spaces where you could start to make this work as something else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a, I know why it's there, but it's, it feels like it's kind of left over, and so that's where you grab some parking. But maybe, you know, that would be a better, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
something to think about.
Point out the location of the community garden space relative to site plan here. Can you guys? Okay. I was also considering, I mean, this is total departure from tot lot, but, you know, even just open play space with a few barbecue units. And I know you have your indoor village center, but it might be nice for a place for people to cook and so on and then have kids run around. And
mm-hmm.
Ideally, if that was located somewhere close to the community garden, that could actually be an all-in-one. I mean, not that necessarily people are going to take food and stick it right on the grill, but it's sort of, people can be cooking, people can be gardening. I don't know if it really works to lump those together, but just food for thought,
yep.
Something to study. The other thought that I'm having in terms of kind of going backwards to our idea of all the partitioned, I mean, potentially as I look at the boardwalk and the individual yards, you could have a bunch of sad, separated, little isolated spaces. One thought is a kind of a bubble space in the middle where the boardwalk leads to a central community space within each grouping where, you know, that would definitely take away from, it would require a sort of reorientation of the buildings almost so that, or some units would have a quite reduced personal, but would have a community space right outside mm-hmm. their home. So just a place for people to identify as this is the center place where we go play, to bring some more life to kind of our, I don't know, I feel like a lot of the way that we design for privacy ends up really impacting our quality of life in terms of creating a lot of isolation. So it'd be really nice to see, I was actually imaging, now this might not be practical at all, but if those buildings were arced in a very gentle semicircle, it would actually orient them toward a central location. So again, that might not be practical at all for the density and the site planning considerations, but again, food for thought. If it mm-hmm. was possible, it mm-hmm. sure would be nice to see those buildings arc toward a central gathering place that's sort of specific to each grouping, not a huge space. But anyways, those are my thoughts.
I would like to support Greg's comment with a couple of illustrations. The English would call this a muse, M-E-W-S. There's some in Venice Beach, and there's some in Pacific Beach where there's an alleyway where the traffic all goes, and then your front yard, you have a porch, you have some defined area, but then the walkway is really a communal space where you sort of meet and greet one another. And those are very successful, highly desirable places. Some of my committee members know of what I'm speaking.
Yeah, I grew up on one.
Did?
I did.
Where?
In Manhattan Beach.
All right.
Manhattan
Beach. That's great. Thank you. So, and then finally, I think we're pretty intent on adding a swimming pool to the project that would happen right here in this area. I think the only reasons to not do it would be if there were any issues with you know, availability of water, given, you know, how careful we are about water conservation and landscaping, that sort of thing. But that's something we think would be a great amenity for the project of this size, especially.
You might have to phase that in mm-hmm. the moratorium.
Right, or it might.
Because I
think
permits have been halted on pools in some jurisdictions.
Yeah.
Not here.
I don't think not here.
You just have to have a skateboard pool before you turn it into a...
Right. Yeah, exactly. Good idea.
What is the village entertainments area?
It right now, I think if we go back to the this is back to the conceptual landscape page. It's kind of in the middle of our packet. This is the packet that that we brought. It's labeled community space on the top. I think it's really meant as the main outdoor gathering space for the community, and if there were going to be a big block party, 4th of July barbecue, I mean that's where it would happen. It would integrate with the community center. So, you know, again, this is very conceptual. You can see there's some doors on the west side of the community center. So maybe we put the kitchen over to there on that side, and so those two really work together.
Do you think the tot lot could work over there, or some sort of? It seems like the better place for it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you'd have parents like watching your kids while they're cooking and stuff.
What would that be again? Did you say by that?
Adjacent to the community center. Okay.
Should we even take a stab at landscaping, or do you guys want to make comments on the architecture first, or what's?
Where do you want to guess if we're done going through everything, right? I'm ready for comments.
Yeah. Questions.
Okay, then questions.
We kind of rolled along. I don't want to monopolize the time here, but I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to bring these out here. The signage for the shopkeepers, that'll be something that will come up later on. Is that? What is the status of the wall on the south side? There's currently an existing wall between the two properties. Is that wall going to remain? You'll build another wall right next to it?
I understand that is not a full height wall. So
It's not.
It's a retaining wall. So we would build, you know, however, on our property with the proper footing, it would be a 6-foot high masonry wall.
Okay. I noticed there's some utilities on site. Is there any plan to underground any of the utility poles?
I think
we have to underground.
It's a condition of approval.
Yeah, but there are some poles over here that are not on the property that will not be undergrounded. But
okay.
Yeah. Can I ask a question about signage? Actually, while you brought it up, when we're talking about bringing signage, you know, for some design review, would that, you know, and we're trying to give the designers some parameters. Are we talking about location, size, material, font? Like how detailed would you want to see
all of that?
You're going to be subject to an overall sign plan.
I would guess you'd have to do an overall sign plan.
Does that come before the DRB?
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, we have a subcommittee of three of us that will,
as part of the approval. In other words, do we have to have the sign plan approved?
No.
No.
Okay.
No.
Sign plan is totally separate.
I know where you're going.
Okay. Different process.
Thank you.
You can break ground before signage.
Okay. We're so close.
There's a wall along Kellogg Way. I'm not sure how long that wall is going to be, but it's a 6-foot concrete wall. I was wondering if there's any way to make it nuanced, have some articulation or some foliage along the street front there.
An existing wall?
And I think Kellogg Way is going away as part of the equal improvements. It's no longer going to be a through street.
What will that become then?
It's a small space. It'll be closed off at the end down here, and it'll be a single driveway for the access to that house.
Okay.
That doesn't necessarily change your comment, but just you should know that as you're making the comment.
It is visible from the 217 as you're driving into Santa Barbara. You'll see this long wall, and if it's just a long white wall, it kind of detracts from the architecture that is behind it. As we know, this is a organic farm. Is there any way of repurposing this, any of the soil? I guess you could use it for the community garden, load up the community garden, use it in any of the planters or something. Mm-hmm. I just note that it probably has some reuse if there's some way to creatively recapture that.
It's okay.
And across the street, I know that's part of the overall plan, and that's kind of considered part of the open space, is the stormwater management area.
And that's for the road.
Okay.
It's not for this project.
Okay. So is there any way that can be used as, is it usable open space in any regard, or is it?
It's pretty much in control of Public Works.
that was some, that was part of the project approval, was that that would be used for stormwater for the Equitable Extension.
Right.
So,
I just wonder if it could be a multi-purpose use in addition to stormwater, but it's something, it's a large piece of space and a
that's not,
place that's lacking.
While
open
it's
space.
Part of their property, it's basically being deeded to the city as
right.
part of the
yeah.
whole approval here. So it's basically going to become city property, and they'll develop it as they see.
Yeah, that'll be a separate project when the city's
yeah.
ready.
Okay. It's just something that could help provide a sense of more open space for this project. And I remember with the first submission, they were talking about solar being part of the project, and I never saw any specifics on that, and I haven't heard that in the discussion today. Graywater, if there's any chance of repurposing that, and any areas where there would be electric vehicle charging stations.
Yes, these will be... all solar and all electric homes.
Ben, do you want to give your 2-minute pitch on how green your project is?
I would love to.
And where the solar PV panels will be arrayed to be
yeah,
most efficient, and does it go to the homeowners association or the individual?
No, every unit has individual solar panels. These are not optional. You can't buy them. They come on the home. So I think we are the only home builder, the only large home builder we know of that does an option solar. We just put solar on every single house, and it goes directly to your own meters. Most of the projects we build, actually, we don't put gas in them anymore. We use all electric, very high efficiency water heaters and cooktops and everything. And it's been fantastic. I mean, salespeople actually bought one of our units in Signal Hill that we were talking about earlier. And she didn't have an electric bill for a couple months, just because she was generating enough power through her own solar panels. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the East Beach Collection, I mean, their bill is about $200 a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it comes down
yeah.
to.
Yeah, it's been great.
So the roofs are oriented to take into account the most efficient way to array the panels, or how does that work?
Sorry, you're going to say that?
No.
Okay.
Solar consultant either.
Yeah.
so there's flat roofs.
Essentially, the roofs, we start with the design of the buildings for the aesthetics, and then the size of the panel, and if that has to be adjusted in any way, that's then the job of the contractor who's installing it to make sure that it's large enough to generate enough power for the home.
Yeah, as I understand it, and particularly the units that obviously... run east-west,
mm-hmm.
have a south-facing roof that works well,
mm-hmm.
and when the building runs north-south, you have the option of either doing east- or west-facing panels, and the panels either run at a reduced efficiency or get bigger to accommodate that, but it's very doable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I imagine you meet early on with your solar consultant and
yes.
kind of figure out.
Yes.
We have more work to do up front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The gray water and the electric vehicle charging?
We probably won't do a gray water system here. We will do rainwater capture that we can use, you know, in limited cases, but we wouldn't try to recycle water from, you know, from the homes themselves.
Although there is reclaimed water potentially going to be in this area as part of the Equal Extension, and so one of the commitments that have been made by City Ventures was to pipe this area for reclaimed water. Yeah.
yeah.
So put in the purple pipe within the development so that the common spaces could be irrigated with reclaimed water.
We also plumb all of our garages for electric cars.
Vehicles. Yeah.
And have the plumbing go directly to the panel with the right size fuse.
240.
Yeah. So that you can put an electric car. We did a program with Nissan when they were rolling out the Leaf with our Signal Hill project. It's like that's all we've done is Signal Hill, right? We did it with East Beach Collection.
Yeah.
There were three projects. So we basically, when the Leaf was coming out, we rolled it out with Nissan, where we did a lot of press with them to say that we're going to start bringing all of our houses with pre-plumbed, plumbed for electric chargers. So if you don't have an electric car, you don't know it's there, but in the plans, you know that if you want to put an electric charger, there's a bullseye on the wall, and you just have your contractor come in and pull it out. You don't have to go get a new electrical permit. You don't have to do any of that stuff. It's already in the panel. So,
thank you, Chair.
Other questions?
I had one question. If I recall correctly, the mayor did some arm twisting about a footpath. Update on that?
He did. I don't think it's been, it's not clear exactly what's going to be happening at the community center yet, but there was some agreement that there would be coordination and I think money put towards the development of that footpath. Yeah. It's more money because it will ultimately be designed by the city.
Understand that. Yeah. I just didn't know if there was an update at all.
It's in the conditions of approval. There's $100,000 that's to be dedicated to this project when it's ready to go.
Right. And I just had one other comment about the modified tot lot, and I'm trying to, of course, the name of the park escapes me now. Stevens Park, downtown. Well, on
San Roque.
Thank you. We were over there recently. They've had a revision, and my kids instantly just bolted. They just went right up to the top of the things. And, yeah, it was rock climbing, but a natural-looking arch with features and, you know, the high monkey bar to walk across. You know, it was a vertical plane. So that, that really seemed to resonate if you wanted an example of what seems to grab a six-year-old's attention.
Comments? Does anybody have other? I have a whole bunch of things I want to go through at some point, but I'm trying to be good and let everybody else go first. So,
just one sort of quick question: any idea how big the pool might be? Lap swimmers, you know, they want some multiple of 100 meters or something like that. On that same topic, I noticed the opportunity
10 meters of work.
Sketched in here as a gazebo. On axis, as one enters in, you have the opportunity to move that gazebo, so it is a feature of how one enters. I can sketch that out.
Yeah, we got it.
Right, so some corner of the pool or whatever you do there can really announce your project in a very strong way.
Yeah. I'll jump in with a few things. So one thing that would be great to see, since you have the opportunity with all this new grading, is, you know, I think that probably bioswales and just dealing with trying to accomplish a zero stormwater, producing zero stormwater in an X rain year, in an X 100-year, 50-year rain event, for instance. And so typically bioswales are a lot more economical than rainwater retention basins. So it'd be nice to see just some, when you guys come back, I'd like to hear about what how you're dealing with stormwater and drainage, maintaining that on site as much as possible. And then, let's see, other thoughts were, for the planting plan, we're obviously going to need to see species and container sizes and plant count, irrigation plans, with definitely want a smart controller in there. And other thoughts about plants would be if there's some way to design though a sort of communal type area that could be for each building cluster. It'd be nice to see, I mean, not sure if they would be utilized or not. If you did utilize fruit trees, that would be the place to have them. Edible, you know, edible landscaping in that area would be nice. Something that could get beat up, obviously a fruit tree is much hardier than vegetables. So just thoughts about wherever to incorporate, if there's a communal area, it'd be nice to see some fruit-bearing trees, if that makes sense to you. And then what else was I looking at? Oh, and with gray water, it just depends on how, I imagine each unit will have their own laundry facility. Is that true? So that would be a lot of sleeving. But typically what we would do is just say it would require like a 1-inch sleeve to each unit, to each laundry unit. So just food for thought. I wonder how much investment it would require to do so, and then have that go to an area that could be appropriately watered with that gray water, mm-hmm. or just at least for providing sleeving for a laundry to landscape, for instance. Mm-hmm. Something to study. It'd be nice to see how, if that's feasible. And the last thought I had around, I agree with Aaron about the, I'd like to see the paving over dense landscaping along the middle corridor for the view shed seem really important. Mm-hmm. And however, a thought, because the architecture of a large branching tree is so attractive, a deciduous or semi-deciduous tree could work where half the year you had just a branching structure that created a canopy, and then in the summer, if those trees were, if you planted large enough trees from the get-go, depending on your budget, you could already have a canopy that you could visually see through even when it was leafed out. Mm-hmm. So just food for thought. That would require some pretty huge trees, obviously, pretty big expenditure. Mm-hmm. But those are my thoughts.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll jump in. Overall, great project. The architecture, some of the comments made earlier about more variation, I would agree with. Mm-hmm. Giving a distinct feel to each area of the site. The elevations I see are very nice and well conceived, but there could be more variation. One thought, I don't know if it's possible, but could at the perimeters, you know, all the buildings are aligned.
Aligned.
Mm-hmm. You know, if we jog this a foot that way, a foot that way, it would, you know, break up the linearity along the perimeters. I know you're right up to the setback on Elkwell, but perhaps there's some opportunity there. Mm-hmm. The many different program elements, the tot lot, the pool, the community garden, they're all over the place. And I would encourage you to clump those together where it's feasible. The community garden in particular seems sort of off to the side as kind of an afterthought where it's placed. So integrate those elements together in a more thoughtful way. Where's that plan? Conception area. So comparing these two plans, I think there's probably too much landscaping on this concept, and maybe a little too much paving on this. Maybe somewhere in between would be the happy medium. I would encourage definitely the Paseo concept that you've mm-hmm. got on this plan. Mm-hmm. Take that for what it's worth. The sound walls, a detail of what those are going to look like. I think breaking them up somehow would be very encouraged, whether it's jogging the walls or having buttresses on the walls or columns on the walls, some sort of detail along those perimeter sound walls would be a benefit. The landscape plant palette. If you are going to convert to reclaimed in the future, I would design the plant materials to, certain plants do better with reclaimed water, obviously, mm-hmm. and are higher. Have a higher salt tolerance, so it will limit your planting palette now, but if the project does get changed over to reclaimed, you'll be all set.
Yeah, of course the HOA is going to be doing a lot of replanting. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
Right. I think little studies of areas like the boardwalks, little blow-up studies would be encouraged for next time around. Mm-hmm. The pool area, important areas that could be enlarged and studied in more detail. I think those are my comments.
Mm-hmm.
You'll go last? Okay.
Sure.
I just want to thank all of my colleagues for their comments. I think they're very thoughtful and very reasonable, and I agree with them all. I really don't have anything more to add other than just hopefully you can take these as far as they can go. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think there's been a lot said, and so hopefully I can keep this short, but probably won't. From an architectural standpoint, I think what you're proposing is headed in definitely in the right direction. So, and I would agree with what Dennis said earlier about trying to make the build. I mean, you've gone a long ways. I mean, these are definitely, you can tell there's, you know, where the breaks are between unit to unit to unit. And while there's some of that starting to happen here where you're starting to blur that line, the more you can do that, the better. So, you know, I don't know if, you know, instead of having, I'm assuming that's the unit and maybe it's not, but, you know, if you could take that kind of a form and have it span from one unit to the next, so to speak, I think will help that. Mm-hmm. I do think I'm always struggling with the building height issue in the city. But, we'll worry about that later. So obviously at the moment we're being told you got to hit 35 feet. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's at this point if we could go to get a variation or a modification or whatever, but we'll deal with that down the road. The two locations of the two-story units. First off, I'd really like to see next time there's a couple of a street scene from Equa. Mm-hmm. Straight mm-hmm. on would be okay. And potentially a street scene here, although it might be better to do some kind of a viewpoint from 217 mm-hmm. to be able to see what's going on here along Kellogg. And then my other thing is the alleys. These alleys, I want to be able to see what's happening there. I mean, this is probably the longest one. And I think Aaron's point about trying to step these may work or may not work, depending upon, you know, if you, you know, that may help you architecturally or it may not as you push and pull a unit, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And then in the alleys, obviously, I mean, what I'm afraid of is a blank three-story wall right. there, right? Yeah. And so what are we doing to help break that up? And is there a possibility of some kind of pocket planter there maybe or something?
And they were shown, yeah. I mean, that was part of the original landscape plan.
The idea you talked about earlier with the boardwalk and trying to pull some of these fences back to create some little kind of bulbs ever so often, mm-hmm. I think, is a good direction. And I would agree with Aaron on making this village thing a little more plaza urban, mm-hmm. right, as opposed to the individual walks to the units. The other thing that was just hinted at is I would hope eventually that when the city puts in Equil, which is what the extra money was thrown in the pot for, right, was the bridge across here mm-hmm. because the community center is back here, right? Mm-hmm. If that's going to happen, and I would assume that at some point, I would certainly assume it could, then maybe we need to enhance a walkway on one side or the other. I don't know, just something to think about, because in my mind, if that becomes either a pedestrian or a bikeway where, again, you know, they can cross here and literally instead of having to go down the Kellogg and around to get to Hollister, then it shortens not only the pedestrian but the bicycle path.
Well, you know, there's that path that...
Yeah, Old San Jose Creek that is part of the...
No, the trail that old... that the Hampton Inn project built.
Yeah, that's Old San Jose Creek.
Trail.
It's a trail along what used to be Old San Jose Creek.
No, the one that goes out to Hollister.
Yes. That's it.
Oh, is it along the creek there?
Well, there's no creek there, but
right.
It was the old creek.
Okay.
The original
okay.
creek was there and okay. ran there. And so, yes, there's
yeah,
a
yeah,
pathway
yeah.
there.
It's next to the hotel and the units.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem with that is getting from this end, I think you would have to connect through that project.
No, uh-uh. You can come up this road right here. There's public
bridge,
access.
There's a bridge right there that you cross to get into here.
Yeah, and then you just come right there to the trail.
Well, yes, I understand that.
Yeah. I believe it's public to get access to that trail.
In theory, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. As part, there was a letter written.
Yes,
right?
I do recall that now.
While if it's public, yes, but just be aware of it.
Okay.
And I would still opt for, if you could, come this way. Because I think that connection would be quicker and better. And if that becomes City Hall, it just seems like that's
be really nice.
More direct, right? Yeah. So. And I would agree with the keeping the trees out of the center of the, right? And I understand the use of the marker thing here. I don't know which one's the right one here. It's all the same. These are the two-story units, right? So I understand this works really well, right? Coming in off Eckwell. I think this, possibly this, will get lost. I don't know if there's a better place to put them. I guess I would also ask the question of, are we really limited to only 6 two-stories? Could we add some more two-stories to study that? I would say wherever you can. I didn't look at it from that standpoint, but if there's any place we could pick it up to soften things, it would, be better, maybe, I don't know, something to think about. I'm assuming, and you could, maybe I'm wrong, these little patterns here, are the parking spaces supposed to be permeable paving, or is it just enhanced paving?
I think,
I'm not 100% sure. I think the idea was that they are... It's as a water quality measure, they're permeable.
I believe that's right.
So it wasn't
it's
as much as design as it was just a practical response to how much permeability we need to create.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, because if this becomes all permeable here on this side, and if I'm understanding right, that becomes the sidewalk, right? Also?
Well, it's not raised. It'll be at the same level.
Right. No, I understand that.
So
it's demarked because of the paving, it's demarked, and that makes it kind of different, right?
Yeah,
so
and
that's
that was
a good thing.
Yes, and that was part of the idea when we had originally, I think even come here, we had talked about wanting to create some visual separation between the drive aisle and sort of where the pedestrians will be in front of the house.
Right, exactly, because these are all, you want to do whatever you can to make it feel better for these people who are hopefully not feeling like they're walking down the road to get to the front yard.
Right. Yeah.
Marker units is okay, that's part of it. Purple pipe in the future, so I think we talked about that, and I would definitely be into that, helping that. Talked about street scenes, Eckwell 217, sign pram. Come later, that'll be an OSP. I know this wasn't a requirement. It would be interesting to know the percentage of landscape area you have, both.
Mm. Oh, we will have that, yeah.
Yeah, both private landscape potentially and what I would guess call common open space. And lighting, we haven't talked about lighting. We're going to want to see how we're going to light this thing. If I'm assuming most of it will be low level, so we're not talking any big thing, but, will you be using bollards or, the main pathway here? Will you want to be doing something there? I don't know. Want to be able to see that next time. I like the idea of the whole all-electric solar thing because I think that's the wave of the future ultimately, but... so I'm glad to see that, and I think that's, I know. The one other thing is architecturally, I don't know. Definitely this way, right? I guess I'm wondering if there's some way, and I think Dennis hinted at it a little while earlier, of doing, since these are, I forget which is which, shopkeepers, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So there has to be some kind of designation and signs and whatever. So maybe that starts to create a slightly different architecture there than on the work live and definitely than on the residential. So while I'm on board for this and I think it's a huge improvement over here, I think there's still some work to be done, I guess, on that level. And I think that's all I got at the moment.
Chair, I just had one more thing kind of inspired, but just one of the comments that you made regarding, I would also second the concept of more two-story, if possible, to be integrated into this. And where I was looking at it might be building 21, because that would have two possible positive outcomes. It would improve the views from the 217, and it potentially could lessen the summer shadows on the pool. Hmm.
Yeah, and then I guess we already touched base on this. I mean, what you're doing with the Village Center, I think, is good. So I think that's headed in the right direction. So, yeah.
Great.
Appreciate the work.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate the comments.
Yeah, very. I think it's definitely an improvement and headed in a good direction. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, yeah, can we have a continuance to a date certain? I think Ben mentioned February 23rd. It's a pretty aggressive schedule, but if you can't make that date, we can continue it to the next date as well.
If the board wouldn't mind, we would love to have the opportunity to incorporate as much of this as we can for a submittal on February 9th, and if it's not enough, then we'll get more feedback on the 23rd.
Do we have to submit it in advance, or can we just bring it back to the meeting?
Like, we do for a packet, but I'll work with you. Okay. We'll do the best we can to give you more time. But if we can have February 23rd.
Because if nothing else, it just gives us, it'll be another chance to have this sort of feedback, mm-hmm, and then if we have to go to a March meeting, then what happens in March hopefully is very well baked.
Right. Okay. Somebody want to try a motion?
No.
just a motion for a continuance to
a date certain.
Incorporate the comments that have been shared by the board.
I'll second that motion.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thank you. Okay, next item is item H1. Madam Secretary, do we have to? Oh, we probably should anyway. Read that into the record.
Thank you. Item H1 is the discussion item regarding review of the draft zoning ordinance, Chapter 17.35 landscaping, and Chapter 17.36 lighting.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Would you like a break or anything before we get started with this? Just want to power through.
I could use a quick break.
Yeah.
Five or less?
Yeah, five or less.
It seems we stood.
Call the back order for item H1, review of the draft zoning ordinance, both the landscaping section and lighting.
Good afternoon. So before, in front of you today are those two sections. And they're part of this giant document, the full zoning ordinance, which is available online and at our counter. Unfortunately, we have to charge for it, but we could certainly, we're going to continue to give you the sections as we move forward. Our intent being here today is to have the DRB have opportunities to have input into sections that are within your purview, and those comments will then be transmitted to Planning Commission when they hear that section. We have a schedule, which we have been sticking to, but as we, I'll just pass these out, as we start approaching part four, which is a much bigger section. I don't know if that schedule, the item schedule at each meeting will shift. Every planning commission meeting is scheduled for the zoning ordinance until April. Every regular meeting. There may be special meetings to conduct business, but we wanted to make sure that we had a focused opportunity for the public to be able to reach our planning commission through the review process of the ordinance. So where we are right now is last night we finished part three, which was the overlay districts, and that was two meetings that those two sections were roughly 65 pages. So, and it was three and a half hours of review. So, yes, they were willing to stay late. we did joke with them that it was 10:30 and they sort of looked at us crazy, and we're just kidding. So as we move forward, there will be one part where we will backtrack. The base districts, and we will make sure that this part of the code comes out to you. The base district section has some general, very basic minimum design standards in the section. Transparency, fenestration, eaves, those types of things, which one member of the commission suggested that they be stripped out of the code and put in guidelines at some point. And that may be what the commission eventually decides, but we will be bringing those to you just to take a look at, to see what your perspective is, so when the commission has a discussion on that particular issue, they have your input from the board. We also invite all of you to come to the planning commission meetings. If there are particular things in the ordinance that you'd like to testify about, you can also reach out to me or any of the staff and give us your comments on sections that may not normally be included within the purview of the board. We will also have an opportunity as we're moving through this to retake a look at the board chapter, including your findings, including design criteria, including how we approve items. So that will also come further in the document. That's actually in part five. So are there any questions about the process or so far? Okay. And please let me know. I tend to go a little fast, so please let me know if you need me to stop as we're moving through it. I defer to the board and how you would like to look at this. We'll start with landscaping, if you'd like to go page by page, if you'd like to just throw out comments as we're moving through it, if you'd like to just take a look at it today, and then I'll come back and we can get comments at the next meeting. It's really up to the board and how they'd like to proceed.
Probably be better if we're going to give comments today to give them all at once, each like to do with projects, or
I guess the question is, does the board want to if there's a disagreement on a particular item, do we care about that, or do we want to just throw everything at the planning commission?
If there's disagreement, we will transmit that as well.
So I think we just throw comments out, or questions, or
as we go,
yeah.
And I'm looking at
both now and in the future.
Yes.
So let me just take a look at this. You have time. The landscaping and lighting sections of the chapter start on page 85. So I don't think this will get to the Planning Commission in the next meeting, but probably the one after that. So there is time. So do you want to run page by page? Would you like me to run people through it?
I'd say let's go. I'm hoping everybody's read it. So I'd say let's go page by page and...
Comments on each page.
And just so you know, we also have Andy Newkirk, who's a member of the zoning team. He's our contract planner. He'll be keeping track of comments also.
Wait, landscape, we're still good. Go. Anybody want to start in? I got nothing on the first page.
I don't either.
This may be not even in the right place, but is there, in landscaping, is there anything that addresses heritage trees, or is that Is there anything where there's any overlap with our public tree advisory committee or any of those issues?
That is a question, too.
Okay, we can take... There are provisions for including trees in your landscaping. We had talked about a tree section, but I can come back to you with more information about that.
Next page. I'll just start in because we're not going to make a motion here. The State Water Conservation Act, Landscaping Act.
Yes.
Conformance to the State Model Water Efficiency Landscape Ordinance. Maybe these guys know it. I don't. I'm wondering if there's copies available to review. I'd like to understand what that is. Can we get copies given to
us? Yes, we will actually provide copies. It's actually going to council at the next meeting. It's a state mandate that every city adopt it in some form or fashion. Right. So I'll make sure that all of you have that.
Okay.
And that was recently updated
right. As
well. And I thought maybe there could be some reference to AB 1881, which is the assembly bill that is that, essentially.
Right. And so what the plan is right now with that is it will be adopted uncodified and then later included within this chapter or perhaps in a different chapter. We're still trying to figure out the best place for it. So it
would probably be a supplemental handout.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Appendix or something. Yeah, supplemental. Okay. Any.
At the bottom of this page, parking areas. Is there anything where we want to address planting islands and parking lots?
Well, I guess I'm yes, absolutely. But I didn't check it, but I'm assuming that will be in the. What this is doing is referring you to that parking sector, right?
It is in the parking section.
So yeah. Required and we'll number be, of trees per parking space, things like that.
Correct, right. And we'll be bringing that to
parking,
you.
Not
The number of trees, let's see, happens in the per the use in a further section in 1735.050, but there is stuff about the parking islands and the number of trees per, and so I will make sure that we take a look at that and bring that to you as well.
I'm just wondering about item C, the middle of that page that talks about building perimeters, minimum 20%. What happens in, like, I got to believe there are places in Old Town where there's literally no room for that kind of landscape area? So setting that as a, while I understand setting it as a minimum 20%.
Well, that last sentence seems to cover places like Old Town.
And
the standard does not apply where a building is located on the front or street side of property line. I have the same kind of question.
And it's a lineal footage thing, right? So it's 20% of the lineal footage? Is that what we're trying to do?
That's the idea.
So there's some cases that's not possible.
Right.
Right.
So
yeah.
There should be some...
We'll make that clear.
Are there any Old Town planning specifications that are separate?
Yes, there's a separate Old Town Heritage Guideline document.
Right, I think that was...
Yeah.
And it has things like that in it as well in terms of...
Anything else on that page? Next page, then. Unused areas, that's a strange concept for me, I guess. I was struggling with that for some reason, because I just don't, unused, what does that mean? Is it a vacant lot? Is it?
It's an area, let's say Cabrillo Business Park. So if that something like that was happening again, which it won't because we don't have the land, but as they were processing their buildings, they would need to either leave areas in a natural state or make sure that plantings were provided. It also, not only for aesthetics, but also for soil and stability and erosion.
Like vacant lot.
Correct.
Situation.
Right.
So maybe there could be something about erosion control, hydroseeding.
Okay.
temporary.
Yeah, something.
Yeah, I'm thinking about kind of what they did with the helipad parking lot, which is actually they landscaped it even though it only had a temporary lifespan.
Oh, well, yeah, but temporary for
what? Temporary can sometimes end up being 25 years. So
I didn't understand the phrase unnatural state. And when you mentioned Cabrillo Business Park, pretty much all of that was regraded. Mm-hmm. So what's a natural state?
Well, I think in the future we would look at things like that and look at a more phased development, and not necessarily the grading would probably need to be phased in that aspect, depending on how the approvals were done. But it's I'll take a look at this and see what we can do to specify.
It's more the phrase.
Yeah. What is natural?
I would use something else rather, or undisturbed, or
see if we define that.
Because if they're grading it and disturbing it, then it needs some kind of landscape to deal with that, even if it's temporary, it seems to me.
Is that defined?
Natural state, no, it's not. So we will either add a definition that we'll have you take a look at, or we will change the language. One thing that I will we'll need to get you the definitions and the use classifications. Anyone who watched the Planning Commission meeting last night heard me say use classification probably 25 times. So when you're looking through the code and there are questions about what do we mean by this type of use, those uses are defined in section 1770 in great detail. It really helps give some clarity to what we're talking about when you say assisted living facilities versus residential care facilities, or freight terminals versus passenger terminals. And I cannot stress the importance of going back and forth and referring to them. It helps everybody understand, and that's just something that I'm making sure I'm pushing as we move through this, just for clarity's sake. And so now we can report back that I said it here too. I know Cecilia was there last night. I'm sure she heard. It's like, oh, again, on the use classifications. But we won't necessarily be dealing with these in the design elements of the zoning ordinance. But if you're looking at it for the base districts, use classifications, or uses in general, you may just want to refer to that. I'm making sure everyone has that note. So.
Okay. Next item on page 87, I guess, talking about landscape areas. Required landscape areas must be maintained free from encroachment by any use, structure, vehicle. I guess I question vehicle, the word vehicle there, because you could potentially have a curb that acts as the wheel stop, but the vehicle overhangs. So is that not allowed or allowed or?
Okay.
I would take vehicle out of that, but I don't know.
Or you could have a turf block area that's landscaped intended for vehicles.
Right.
Okay.
And my next item B, landscape mound, I don't get it. I don't know where that's going to happen in the city. I'm confused by why that's even in here.
So put it at the marketplace?
I had the same comment on the mounding. I know that this might be a typical situation along Hollister with some of the business buildings, but it shouldn't be a requirement for, you know, every project.
I didn't know where it would apply or anything, so I was confused by that whole thing.
Landscaping mounds must be constructed
on slopes not to exceed 4 miles.
It implies that we need to have berms on every.
Right, and that's an option within the stormwater. Okay. I will take a look at that.
Yes, I agree. The language isn't clear at all. It seems to imply that the mounds are only to be constructed on slopes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's phraseology.
The specification is that when a mound is required or desired,
right,
then you can specify how it needs to be built, but that would be the caveat.
Okay.
And these are... That's more of a guideline type thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it would almost seem to be like a definition for a landscape mound as opposed to being here where it's a general requirement. Well, I would say a general requirement applies to should apply to more than 50% of your projects, and I would don't know where that's.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else got anything else on that page?
Just under materials, does mulch count as landscaping or ground cover?
I would say yeah. I would say
feature,
yes.
Perhaps.
Mulch, whether it's gravel mulch, bark mulch, that's landscaping.
Right. And that could be considered as adequate, even if it were for a significant sure. run of space.
Right, in one of those unused areas.
But the nice thing is if someone came and said, all my landscaping is mulch, the board would have some say about that.
Okay. Next page then, 88.
Under trees, is there any need for a distinction between protection of scenic vistas and the use of skyline versus canopy trees? And also, I guess maybe it's further in there, under species diversity, any mention of the use of deciduous trees?
And I'm guessing this is where it would be, but I'm not 100% sure of... If you got a project and you have a significant tree like a, say, a 48-inch oak or something mm-hmm. that needs to be removed in order to make the property developable, and so you remove it, there needs to be some mitigating measures. Is this where that would fit? I don't know.
Okay. Well, typically, that the mitigation is dealt within the environmental review, and if you've got a 48-inch oak, there's definitely going to need to be some on that. we'll take a look.
Definitely needs there needs to be some kind of mitigation. Yeah, no question. Anything else?
I had comments on size and spacing. Mm-hmm. Ground cover plants must be at least the 4-inch pot size. I've had some success with plugs, which are smaller than that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a little limiting if you say 4-inch.
And would hydro mulch or hydro seeding also potentially?
Right.
Not be allowed.
That's sort of for ground covers.
Right.
So I think I would change that to liners or 4-inch pot size.
Okay. Would you consider language that just would be a performance standard instead? Ground cover plants must be planted in a size and space to provide full coverage within the time frame specified by the species, or
I'd be happier with that because I think it's...
Yeah, whatever works, basically. Yes,
right.
Or maybe we don't
and with different species of plants, you're going to have different...
Right.
Or maybe right. we don't even have that sentence. Just take it out. And then the next one, a mix of 1/3 1 gallon, 1/3 5 gallon, 1/3 15 gallon. I would... As a landscape architect, be opposed to that. I've done projects with all 1 gallon before, and they've been successful.
Okay.
You just don't want to tell them 1/3 of each is really prohibitive to the design.
Two.
Just might not be appropriate. So.
And then the last sentence: shrubs must be spaced at 75% of their mature length. I guess the mature size would be a better word, and I think. It'd be fine for shrubs to be spaced at 100% of their mature size.
I guess you're trying to achieve density?
75% would have overlap right. between shrubs right. eventually.
Okay.
And
so we have concurrence on?
And mature height and spread on Sunset Garden Book, I don't know, I find plants always get bigger than what they say mm-hmm. the maximum size is anyways.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then on the next page.
Before we leave that, so the phrase might be, shrubs must be spaced at no less than 100% of their mature size. Or no more than, sorry, no more than 100%
of right. their mature size. I mean, that's really a designer thing, yeah. not...
Well, it's only when planted to serve as a hedge or screen.
There's just so much nuance.
That's right. That's for the hedge requirement.
Right. Yeah. So that's where the overlap might not be terrible. But 100%.
Right. 75%. Yeah. I think that's still. I think that's a designer decision. Like a laurus, like a bay laurel. That's a, you know, a 20-foot tree, but I'll space that at 3 feet apart if I want it as a hedge.
Okay.
So
would no less than 100% work in regards to a hedge or screen?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. I guess. That wouldn't really look like a hedge, though.
True. Okay.
Kind of a similar comment on the trees. I think saying a certain amount of trees should be 24-inch blocks or greater is... I don't know, just adding, I think I've had success planting all 15-gallon trees.
15-gallon, right.
I think 15-gallon should be the minimum for trees, though, with a few exceptions.
So you could just strike out the whole first sentence and start with all trees must be a minimum of 15 right, gallons in
right,
size.
Right, mm-hmm. And then the last sentence is a little odd. A minimum of 4 feet of continuous open planting area must be provided between trees. That's really close for trees to be planted together.
What would your minimum tend to be?
It just totally depends on the
species.
Site condition, the species, the...
Yeah.
I just would strike that sentence altogether. Should I continue on this page?
Absolutely. Keep going.
The... design principles, texture, color, form, it just seems kind of vague, though, what's being asked for there. I mean, these are not guidelines, this is zoning.
Right.
So it sort of seems more like a guideline than a zoning thing to me. So I don't know where to, maybe we eliminate those sentences or put them in a guideline package. I don't know.
Okay.
On buffering and screening, I would just add use of niche. I would add vines to that list since they can be used on walls to prevent graffiti. That's all I have on that page.
Anybody else? Okay. Page 90.
Go for it.
Go.
Under landscape plans, item A, I would just strike or equivalent. I think just using the Wilcall system for determining if a plan is high, medium, or low is good enough. And it keeps the standard consistent. Mm-hmm. The existing trees, I would say existing trees over 4-inch diameter as measured at breast height is more of an industry standard than 6-inch at 48 inches. But I mean, 48 inches is fine. That's breast height for most people, probably. Irrigation, I would add another item, an irrigation plan. That complies with the state model landscape ordinance would be item F under that list. That's all I all I've got on that page.
I don't understand the alternative compliance thing, that whole thing. I'm not sure why we're trying to allow or when that would apply again. And so unless somebody can convince me it's useful, I would get rid of that whole thing just because I don't know why we're doing some alternative compliance thing.
Has that ever been used in Goleta, or is this a new?
It's a new
consideration.
Yeah.
Before we leave that page, I just have one thing. In this time, is there a need, or is it essential to have a requirement for minimum maintenance of landscaping, noting that some plants and grasses intrude into walkways, bike paths, and roadways, or is that just considered understood?
Well, typically, it's done as a condition of approval, but maybe right. It needs to be in here.
I'm all for putting maintenance in here somewhere.
Yeah, I
think that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing.
Can you restate? What would not intrude?
Yeah, I was just saying a requirement for minimum maintenance of landscaping to prevent plants and grasses and shrubs from intruding into walkways, bike paths, and roadways.
Okay.
Some plants are appropriate to plant because they have to be mowed rather frequently and may not be, or cut back rather frequently and may not be cost effective for whoever's responsible for that.
Okay.
Next page, I guess, 91. Well, I guess that's all under that alternative compliance.
Can you explain what the alternative compliance?
I would need to. Well, our consultant who's working on this does zoning ordinances all over. And if you had, let's say, you had a landscaper come in, who, it was a project from a foreign country and the landscapers from a foreign country, their process is different. And their landscape plans are unusual, but they do comply with most of this. It would give the board some flexibility to be able to approve a landscape plan that wouldn't necessarily adhere to every single thing, but it still meets the intent. You would just have to make different findings to make sure that we could approve them.
Because what I'm seeing under this category is things we want to promote, like native plants and water efficiency.
I think those are the least of which we need to comply with. If somebody's going to do a majorly alternative design than what we're used to in terms of industry standards, they would have to make sure to meet these basic minimum requirements, I guess is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty vague, but
it just provides flexibility in the event that there is some kind of alternative that maybe the board really likes, but there's this, that, and this that it doesn't quite conform with, but it gives you the opportunity to still prove it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I guess I'm okay with
it.
Can we do that anyway? Yeah.
Not really, the way this is written. So it gives some required approval and required findings for that alternative. I'll take a look at this and see what I can do, given the comments I'm hearing now.
And I just want to go back to the public street tree committee thing. Has anybody thought about doing heritage trees?
It was discussed as part of this ordinance and then removed, and it's going to be done on a separate standalone ordinance.
Anybody got anything else on page 91?
Does our speaker want to talk there?
No, she's about here about lighting.
One broad general comment would be if we could have a separate document as far as just landscape design guidelines, like we do with Old Town Heritage. A separate guideline package.
We are generating a lot of, this process is generating requests for those type of packages in a number of different planning areas. It won't happen with the ordinance itself. It would be a post-ordinance project.
Right.
But that is certainly something that would be something that the board would be, involved with, you'd probably end up leading that. There's also been the call for just straight design guidelines for buildings that they like to see, not like Old Town, but just general. Mm-hmm. So you can hand that to a developer and they know what to expect walking in the door. But that's also a future project.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's it for landscape. Speak now. Okay. The next chapter is lighting, and we have a speaker slip for Cecilia Brown. Would
you like? Are you going to go through it?
Well, do you want to speak
first?
We're
going to do the same thing, page by page. Do you want to?
Oh, I do. Okay. Great.
Do you want to say something, or do you want to just step up here and participate?
Say right, and look at this power. This power trip sitting next to Jenna.
Get your microphone there.
Here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, and members. Lighting is a very important consideration in the city of Goleta, and I think you know that I passed to you through an email the outdoor lighting design guidelines that are basically dark sky. These were guidelines that were developed a decade ago based upon standards in the last century. What I see in the proposed lighting ordinance are sort of the standards that have been carried forward when, in fact, lighting has moved on into the 21st century, particularly with the development of California Energy Commission's regulations there. It's the Chapter 6 code. I think you probably know about that, Aaron, in terms of some of the lighting standards that are required. And my concern is that there are some lighting standards in here, but they're sort of backward-looking rather than forward-looking. And I didn't know whether or not the DRB would be interested in trying to push the city to try to do something a little more progressive, particularly in some of the areas where we're using still foot candles, and some of the parameters for foot candles are pretty high for a parking lot lighting. So I give you that thought. I don't know. I know that Ms. Carmen probably is not real keen on doing something different, but I put that thought to you just because there is a lot different new standards in lighting than when these guidelines were written. But I do have some very specific comments on very specific parts, additions. So I didn't know if you wanted me to, how you wanted me to do that. I'll just take over.
I'm having a tough time here because you're a member of the public, and I don't want. I want. How can I?
If I can just add, we are sitting down with members of the public, including Cecilia,
right.
And getting their comments and bringing them to the Planning Commission as well. We've already had one significant meeting where we will have more with her, and we could transmit comments that way. We can sit and look at things now, but I think this is a fairly substantial change that she's discussing. So I'm not sure if this is the best time.
I guess that's what I'm wondering. Yeah.
I give you that as a preface to think about, to see where you want to go, considering what you have in front of you, and whether or not there's the incorporation of any other thinking as you go through. I don't know how much you guys know about lighting. I know Carl.
Is that what you're talking about?
Sorry. Yeah. 1736. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Got it.
So but I have some additions anywhere. Yeah. That's the only thing I wanted to. You just want to go through this, I'd be happy to do that point by point. Or however you want to do.
Maybe the easiest way would be to receive it in writing, and we could.
Yeah, that's what needs to happen somehow. I'm not.
Yeah, that would be the most efficient way.
You know how much time it takes to write these letters? You have any idea?
No, it sounds like that we would also be here quite a long time. I mean, it's,
no, it's
your,
not. I just
your
have,
points are valuable, but we need to. That's my request, is that we receive it in writing.
Let me just ask you just sort of a broad, overarching question. Staff has included architectural lighting as, it's sort of a prohibition, but it's not. And I don't know whether the DRB has ever done architectural lighting in any of their lighting plans. I don't think you have.
Not typically.
So I wanted to point your attention to that
in particular. And the other issue is about the foot candle limit on gasoline station, convenience store aprons and canopies, and in parking lots. I think they're too high. I think 5.5 is too high. 5.5.
I was wondering, there's a state requirement, right? So it should be as simple as knowing what that is.
Yeah, but the state requirements don't do that. They don't. They're not in that way anymore. They're in by lighting zones, zonal lumens, power limits, power allowance. It's completely different. You can't go into the state regs and go, oh, what is the foot candle limit? They don't have that anymore. It's only done, from what I see, for signs and stuff, but anyway. So, okay. I will go home, and I already have some.
We can also, when we have a future meeting, we can also go through it bit by bit if writing it is too much. But it makes more sense to show the edits so people and the new language that you'd like to see.
Okay. Well, there's not much. It's just, I'll do it. I already just have to revise. All right. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. And one thing, when we did first discuss this with Cecilia, the outdoor lighting guidelines and the dark sky, in my research, those were never really officially adopted by the City Council. They were adopted by the board. And so that is something that we will need to probably go back and take a look at, and we can do that as part of the full the full guideline work that we're going to be doing in the future. So we'll take a look at all of the everything that we have on online and where things are. Okay.
Thanks for sticking around.
Okay.
And if the board is done and tired and they want to go home, we can pick this up at the next meeting. Just putting it out there.
We're talking 5-6 pages. I can't imagine I'd say we keep going. It's not. My first question on page 92 is definitions, and I know there's a definition section way in the back.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be lacking relative to lighting, and when we get to signs, I'll have the same comment. and that I can probably, at least from my point of view, go through that at some point and provide written.
That'd be great.
What I think's lacking, but yes, just one of my comments. Anything else on that page?
I have a question for staff on A2, holiday lights. The second sentence, flashing holiday lights are prohibited on commercial properties. What is the logic behind that?
It's the flashing.
Is it a safety thing?
Yes.
It just seems to me to be sort of overbearing that in a residential neighborhood, on maybe even a busy feeder street like mm-hmm. Hollister, flashing lights are okay. But then you're going to, this is actually a zoning violation if a commercial businessman hangs up a string. If someone complains.
Yeah, we in this city currently, code enforcement is done on a complaint basis.
It just seems to be a little overbearing.
I would agree, particularly if it's holiday lights and you're controlling it between November 1st and right, exactly, then, right.
It's not sort of
I agree.
Friendly, mm-hmm. good land neighborhood attitude.
Okay.
Nobody wants to get a ticket during Christmas for a fine.
For their holiday lights.
Yep.
Thank you.
Chair?
Mm-hmm.
Under architectural lighting, I didn't mean to cast aspersion on one individual building, but trying to figure out if there's a way to identify and to mitigate what I would call excessive lighting. And this isn't the individual lumens or foot candles of an individual light, but an abundance of those lights. There's the example I was going to give is an athletic club on Cayo Real where it's all shielded downlighting. It's just there's an abundance of it, and the building is very, very lit up at nighttime. To me, it seems excessive and really stands out in the city of Goleta. And just wondering if there is any way, we talk about the maximum light of spillage and the maximum light per bulb, but isn't there some sort of cumulative impact of a lot of ones that meet, they're downlit, they're not spilling over,
that meet the lumens and foot candles, but there's just too many of them. An abundance or an excessive amount. And I don't see anything in here that mitigates that.
We will take a look at the general plan and see what's in there in regards to this question.
I wanted to add, actually, in the temporary exemptions, which starts on the previous page but comes through, and I forget exactly where this happened, but at some place somebody wanted to have literally a gas lantern out front for character.
Holdren's.
So they're just you either need to acknowledge that those are going to happen or allow them or just deal with that somehow. And then on searchlights, operation of searchlights and lasers, etc., for advertising purposes are one of the prohibitions.
Anybody got anything else?
Under temporary exemptions A, B, C, etc., I would actually propose that there be one more letter added, but that everything get bumped down in A would be purpose. Like, there's why? What's the purpose of your? I mean, maybe it's already assumed, but it.
I'm not sure I'm following you.
Purpose. So, what's the purpose of the temporary lighting? I see everything describing the nature of the lighting, like how many watts, lumens, location. What are you using it for? That's the most important thing. That's the kind of hinge pin of why we would allow an exemption. What's the purpose? I mean, the applicant must need to know that.
I think it's
is that implied? But
it's implied, but I don't think it's a bad thing to
make sure
spell
that
it out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Argue their case.
Right.
I had one thing on item D, prohibitions. The last sentence says, however, low-voltage accent landscape lighting is allowed. That seems to imply that uplighting of trees or walls is allowed.
That's true. Yeah, I would say so. I would say, and that's not good.
So that, but it does say landscape lighting, which indicates...
Well, it says low voltage, but...
But landscape means you're illuminating plants, right? Or does it? I guess that's the question.
But it's...
Are you saying that even uplighting, are you arguing against uplighting on plants?
Or because it's under it's a prohibited type of light.
Got you.
So it's prohibited, but it goes on to say, however, low voltage accent lighting is allowed. Well, I'd say that needs to go away.
I think the intent of this is to get to lighting on a low voltage lighting on a path in the landscaping.
Right.
And there are better ways to.
Right.
But however's.
Yeah.
You might add for safety and navigation reasons under that, however.
Yeah, maybe.
Something like that.
I think that that's covered on somewhere else, the path lighting, isn't it? I mean,
inside that section.
Is there a definition of low voltage so that it's pretty clear what that is?
Well, in the supplemental requirements, bollard lighting or similar low mount landscape fixtures must be used for illuminating pedestrian areas.
Yeah, I see the confusion in D. It's more if you're saying unshielded landscaping is prohibited. So then what is the purpose of low-voltage accent landscape lighting that is allowed?
Right.
The purpose is, like you said,
for
safety or
whatever. So I think we'll be able to fix that.
Next page. 94. I'm great with the mercury vapor going away because I think it's problematic from a lot of standpoints. So that being under a prohibited type of light is good from my standpoint. That was just a general comment. Go ahead.
under timing controls, you might want to add, I mean, there's lighting controllers out there that will dim lights at a certain time. I don't know how to say it, but maybe those are encouraged, or I know you've got the photo sensor.
Mm-hmm. Time clock?
Yeah. Well, there's you know, there's lighting controllers, kind of like irrigation controllers. They're smart now.
It can adjust for different times of the year.
Area at this time of day.
Oh, wow.
So, okay. I mean, we can encourage those types mm-hmm. of things.
They go on in a total eclipse.
Right. And under exceptions for shielding, is all exterior illuminating devices must be fully shielded except as provided below. I think maybe string lights would be one of those lights that might be an exception. I don't know how everyone else feels about that.
I suppose it depends on the lumens. I imagine there's probably some really powerful string lights. I don't know. I'm guessing.
And I would, under shielding, exception one, luminaires that have a maximum output of equal to a 20 light bulb must be left unshielded, blah, blah, blah. Seems to me that if you have a bulb that's under an eave, it's doing the same thing as having a fixture that has a
opaque top.
Right?
Okay.
So there needs to, so I would say that's acceptable. Next page, 95. The only thing I had on there was, I guess there's two places. There's A, height of wall-mounted fixtures, and under parking lot lighting, there's two places where it says zoning administrator.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly the second one, zone may allow light fixtures to exceed 20 feet in large parking areas, blah, blah, blah. Wouldn't that be a DRB issue?
Yeah, that did come up at the initially with some of the general comments at the Planning Commission. That'll be something that'll be looked at.
Okay.
There is, and we'll get to that in a future section, there is a proposal for some administrative design review, and that's where that would come into play.
You're going to say something about 12 feet wall height?
Mm-hmm.
It seems, it seems excessive.
Oh, yes, agreed.
Like, does it really need to be higher than 4 feet, 3.5, 5? It's pedestrian-oriented wall light.
Yeah,
shouldn't be above eye level, probably.
Right.
8 feet anyway. Height of the door? Head height of a door?
6'8"?
6'8"?
7 feet? I can see it at 8 feet if it has a shield. Down.
Yeah. 12 is definitely high. Next page, 96. The only thing that is, just like there are requirements at gas stations, I believe there's also requirements at ATMs for safety purposes from the state. But if Cecilia is right and they've changed the whole way you described that, I don't know how we tie into that somehow. But
no, that's in the California financial
requirements. Yeah.
On walkways, bikeways, and parks, item one, I think there would be an exception for if it was an ADA path of travel, it would need to be 1 foot candle minimum.
And that's one of those areas where state law would supersede our code. But there's no reason we couldn't include it. So.
Anybody got anything else? That's it for that.
All right.
We did it.
Hey, thank you for first one. I'll be back. Hey. And would it be easier for you for what the extra parts we give you, the use classifications, the definitions, to get that in hard copy or email? Hard copy.
I'm sorry, Mr.
When we send you the use classifications and the definitions and other parts that, I mean, we did the packet via hard copy, but these are will be between the packet. We'll try and get that out to you as soon as we can.
I believe everyone has the full binder, correct?
Right, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we could just reference.
It. All right.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, sorry.
Oh, thank you. I was confused there for a minute. Okay.
It's been a long week.
Yeah. And it's only Tuesday.
Well, we had two separate zoning ordinance meetings yesterday. And I will just reiterate for the public, we have a city workshop tomorrow night here. Starts at 4, goes till 7. There will be stations set up about subject areas. Everyone's invited to attend. All of the planning staff will actually be in attendance to serve, to answer questions, and just talk about planning issues and zoning issues in general. So just want to make sure that any of the viewing public knows about that. So thank you.
Okay, thank you.
That's why I come.
And announcements by members. Anybody have any announcements to make? Then meeting's adjourned, and good afternoon to the good land.
All right.
Jeff.